Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Conservative Cauldron people, we have made it to a fabulously long three-day holiday weekend. Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. Like I said, we are here, people. It is the end. It is the end of whatever kind of week it is that you've had. It's been a long one, and, you know, it's usually, I think it's longer when you know you're going to have that extra day off. You get a little chance to sleep in. You'll do some barbecuing. People will hang out at the pool. You know, it'll be great just to just kick it in and hang out. And, you know, I think we all need it. It's a long time coming. But, you know, we got a lot to get into tonight. Before I get into it all, as long as we are talking about the whole three-day Memorial Day weekend, and I've written about this a bunch of times, and a lot of people have, and I think that we all try to, if you go on any kind of social media today, be it Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, whatever it is, I think that we all try to remind ourselves, and we try to tell each other that, yeah, it's perfectly fine to look forward to an extra day off and sleeping in and all of that. But while we're doing all those things, while we're spending time with our families and barbecuing and swimming, and while we're doing all those things, let's remember what this extra day off and what this long holiday weekend really means. And we need to remember the people that it was created for. And you know, I think we all know, I mean, you know, we all know our history, and we all know why we celebrate Memorial Day. But sometimes I think we all need a little bit of a refresher course. And, you know, the reason that we get this extra day off this weekend is so that we can honor the men and women who have given it all, who have given the ultimate sacrifice, standing up and defending our nation and defending her ideals and defending her honor and defending who we are as Americans and defending who we are, not only who we are, but what we stand for and what America is about. And we hear so much now, you know, all you have to do, just go to our friends, our fellow compatriots at MSNBC. Anytime that you want to hear about how America sucks and how all of the problems of the world were created by America, that's the only place you have to go. Go to any lefty website. Go to MSNBC. Go to any of the places where you know that they are going to be a reliable source for telling you that America sucks. And we hear so much of that now. And you know, America is not perfect. And the reason that America is not perfect is because America was founded by humans, and humans are imperfect. But, you know, pound for pound, look anywhere else in the world, and there are not people who are risking their lives to cross oceans on 2x4s to get any other place in the world but America. And we are, as a nation, we are blessed and that we have had people who are willing to stand up and to go to faraway places, far away from their friends and family and loved ones, and oftentimes they don't come home. And those are the people who we are honoring this weekend. Those are the people who knew that there was a good chance that they might not come home, and in fact did not. And they gave it all. They gave the ultimate sacrifice in defense of this nation because of their love for it. And, you know, I think we need to remember that while we're barbecuing and swimming and relaxing and doing all the things that we're going to do this weekend. Let's remember the men and women who are no longer here with us, and the reason that we are able to do all of the things that we do this weekend is because of their ultimate sacrifice. And you know, not only let's not only keep them in mind, let's also keep their families and their loved ones in our minds and in our thoughts this weekend as well, because they too have given an ultimate sacrifice in the loss of their husband, their brother, their uncle, their father, whoever it might be. So with that thought in mind, while we are talking about veterans and people who have fought and died for our nation, I think that, well, you can't go very far this week without hearing about all of the horrific tales of the Veterans Administration and the VA scandal that is rocking this nation. This actually did come to light a few weeks ago, but I think we are just now, and it's really kind of ironic that on the eve of this 3-day Memorial Day weekend, where we do honor the sacrifice of our fallen soldiers, that this really is getting to be full blown, and more people are coming forward, and we're finding out more and more just exactly what's going on at these facilities, and just exactly what the people who are charged with the care of our veterans, just exactly what they're doing, or actually probably more appropriately, what they're not doing. We've been hearing about tales of secret waiting lists, that there's a cooking of the books, if you will. There is the official computerized list of when people are to be seen by a physician or whoever it is that they are to be seen by. And then there's the real list. There's the secret list that no one is supposed to know about. And that is the list that is, well, at least for right now, and we do know that it has happened in Phoenix, and I'm going to say, hey, if it's happened in Phoenix, it's happened at other facilities. It's happened at other VA hospitals. We know that right now today that approximately, and this is the number that the government is giving out. So if this is a number that the government is giving out, plan on it probably being about 10 times what you're hearing. But we are hearing so far that the number is 23 to 24 veterans have died waiting for care that they earned in their service to our country. And they came home and for whatever disease, whatever condition that they were living with, expected to go to the VA and get, they should be getting the utmost in health care. They should be getting what the President of the United States gets. And they're getting far from it. They are being sent home with a handful of medication. They are not getting tests that they need to get. They're basically being blown off. And you know, the more we hear about it, it's so far it has spread to about 17 to 19 states. So what possibly that maybe the government could have originally maintained what was just a band of rogue VA administrators in Phoenix. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Just a rogue band They seem to be all over the place. There's rogue band of IRS agents in Cincinnati. Now we have rogue bands of VA employees in Phoenix. Well, it's not just rogue bands here and there. Like I just said, it has spread to at least 17 to 19 different states at different facilities in these different states. There are even tales of veterans who while waiting for the care that they need, they're committing suicide. And that's not even counting people who are dying because of whatever condition it is that they're suffering from because they are lacking the health care that they need. And last Friday, the Undersecretary for Health at the VA, Robert Petzl, stepped down. There are more and more voices, people demanding that somebody be held accountable for this. And right now, so far, the loudest voice has been for General Eric Shinseki, who is the head of the Veterans Administration. More and more people are calling for his resignation. He has not resigned as yet. But like I said, Robert Petzl, who is one of his General Shinseki's underlings, stepped down last Friday. And that's all well and good, but here's the thing with Robert Petzl. Robert Petzl was going to step down later this year anyway. So, you know, it's really not it's not a head rolling, if you will. And we're still waiting for that. It took the president, he came out this week and finally gave a statement on this debacle, this circus that is the Veterans Administration. He claimed to not really know anything about this until he saw news reports. Well, again, that's another familiar tale. That's another familiar story. Where have we heard that before? We heard that about the IRS. We've heard it about Fast and Furious. We no doubt heard about it from Benghazi, about Benghazi, because we know that the president was not in the Situation Room that night, but I digress. The VA, the Veterans Administration, just for those of you who don't know, this is the largest run healthcare system in the nation. The VA serves roughly 9 million veterans. And, you know, we're going to find out more and more even today from the facility in Miami. There are doctors and other whistleblowers coming forward telling basically the same thing, that there were two separate lists here, that there was the official list that said that all of these people were to be seen on this date by this physician, and nothing could be further from the truth, that the real list was not in the computer, it was a manual list, and it was the secret list of people who are waiting weeks, months, even up to a year to be seen by a physician at the VA. And you know, there's a couple of interesting things going on here, because it also came out today that at Gitmo, you all remember Gitmo, that is where Guantanamo Bay, that is where we are, the United States, are holding people who are known or suspected to be terrorists. Many of them have Al-Qaeda affiliations. They have many, many different terrorist organization associations. Well, we got a little information about just exactly what goes on at Gitmo versus what goes on at the Veterans Administration. And I'm gonna give out a little stat here, and you can all chew on this and see what you think about this. But if you are a known or suspected terrorist living your life at Gitmo with your government with your government authorized prayer rug, your three halal meals a day, your soccer field, and any other you know, your free Quran whenever the old one runs out, and bam, there's a new one on the doorstep of your jail cell, you know, 1 minute later. If you are a resident of this country club called Gitmo, Well, you are, if you have any sort of medical condition, you are in the swim of things, my friend, because if you are a resident of Gitmo, the ratio of doctors to individuals that the physicians must care for, well, that ratio is 1.5 to 1. That means that for every 1.5 terrorists, there is a doctor. Well, if you go to the VA anywhere, you know, anywhere in the nation, if you are looking for health care from the Veterans Administration, well, it's a little different story. The ratio is for every 35 veterans, I'll say that number again, for every 35 veterans, there is one person to handle their case, to handle their situation. So let's look at that again. Let's just make sure that we're all on the same page. Gitmo, Mohammed, Ahmed, soccer field, 3 hots and a cot, free Quran, government authorized prayer rug. 1.5 to 1. 1.5 terrorists to 1 healthcare professional. Veterans Administration, men and women who have served our nation and served with honor and dignity and sacrificed. 35 to 1. So you can see why that this whole debacle, that this whole VA monstrosity, this disaster, is a bit of a problem for Democrat senators who are running for re-election in states that are pretty red. What's happening is that these Democrat Senate challengers who are running in fairly red states, well, they are running as hard and as fast from this as they possibly can. To their credit, there are in fact several Democratic senators and congressmen who are calling for the resignation of General Shinseki, and they are urging President Obama to really, you know, let's investigate this. Let's do it right. Let's do it. Don't give it any lip service. Let's do what needs to be done and find out what happened. Let's find out why it happened, and let's find out how we can prevent it from happening again. Let's fix it. Let's fix this system so that these men and women do not have to wait for up to a year sometimes for health care that they so desperately need. And so that is becoming a bit of a problem for some Democrat senators who wish to be reelected in 2014. This whole circus is getting to be a problem for them. And I'm sure that we will see more and more of them speak out on this, especially if this whole thing goes the way of the IRS, and it goes the way of Benghazi, and it goes the way of Fast and Furious, where there's just this constant stonewalling and this constant lack of cooperation for any sort of documentation, for anyone, people coming forward to give their stories or just anything like that. If this scandal, and I really don't think that the Obama administration, they're in enough trouble right now already. If you're going to politicize this and you're going to look towards November, towards the midterms, they already have problems right now. And a lot of those problems stem from Obamacare. And this is only, this scandal is just like, it's like the IRS and it's like Benghazi, and that the more and more that we find out, the more information that we manage to drag out of these people, it's only going to get worse before we begin to fix it and make it better. It's not pretty for them, and they know it's not pretty for them, and so hopefully we will see more and more Democrat congressmen and senators urge the administration to really ramp up an investigation here, so that we can fix this, and so that the people who have stood on the front lines defending our nation, so that they don't have to deal with this bureaucratic nightmare and this this completely unnecessary stuff that they have to go through when they want health care. And while we're on the subject of health care, let's do talk about health care for a minute. Let's talk about it. Because, and I haven't heard a lot of people say this this week, I've heard people in passing say it. I've heard people, you know, in passing in the course of every day say it. But here's the thing. If people don't think, like I just said earlier, this is the largest, the Veterans Administration is the largest healthcare system in the nation. We are just beginning, just now, we are, as a nation, we are beginning to implement the Affordable Care Act. We're just now on the cusp of implementing Obamacare. And for anyone who does not think for a nanosecond that this is not a preview of government-run healthcare, I don't know what else I can do for you. I don't know what else that I can tell you, because right here is a shining, glaring example of what happens when the government runs healthcare. You need no other explanation than to look towards the Veterans Administration to see how the federal government will handle healthcare for everyone, not just veterans. And if that doesn't scare the bejesus out of you people, well, then I don't know. I have no other words for you. But, you know, I think the other thing, too, and this is just a little, you know, kind of a thing that maybe that other people are wondering about as well. We're always hearing the president say that he heard about all these scandals through news reports. He finds out about everything on TV. Well, so does that mean he has no communication with his cabinet secretaries, with the people who are charged with running these agencies? He does not communicate with them or speak to them on a regular basis. It either means that, or it either means that he spends an inordinate amount of time in front of the television, because if that's how he's finding out about these things, that no one is coming to him, knocking on the door saying, "Mr. President, we need to talk to you about this," that's a problem too. That both of those things, if he is that out of touch, if he has that little of communication with the people under him, and not only that, but if he's watching that much TV, I don't know. We already know we got big problems, people, but you know, that may be the biggest one of all. But this is just beginning, and we are going to be hearing a lot more about this in the coming days and weeks. And it's going to get really interesting too, because this is something I think I think the conservatives hate to politicize, because you're talking about the lives of people. You're talking about the lives of real people. You're talking about the lives of men and women who have defended our country and defended our nation. But it can't be lost on anyone the fact that the closer that it gets to election time, and we're going to hear more and more about this, there's going to be a lot of foot dragging, and it's going to be our job to keep the foot dragging and to keep the stonewalling to a minimum, so that we can find out what happened here, so that we can fix it, because we owe it to the men and women who have defended our nation. It's really that simple. But other things this week, on a little lighter, well, maybe not a lighter note, it's serious, but we had a few primaries this past week. Some people were calling it a midterm Super Tuesday. I don't know if you could call it that. But there were some interesting races here. I think probably one of the more prominent ones was the primary between Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and his primary challenger, Matt Bevin. Matt Bevin was very, very heavily supported by the Tea Party, and Senator McConnell really kind of skated to a pretty easy victory. And it's interesting because I have a piece here from the Wall Street Journal. And what it is here is five takeaways from Tuesday's election. And one of the first things it says here is that the GOP establishment remains undefeated in 2014. And, you know, if you're going to talk about just Tuesday, that really is kind of true, because most of the candidates that there was really only one heavily backed Tea Party candidate that won, and that was in Nebraska. Ben Sasse was running for the Senate, the Republican Senate nomination, and he beat out three other opponents. And really kind of the precursor to all of this was, and maybe it was a week ago, 2 weeks before, 2 weeks ago in North Carolina, where you had the, I believe he is the Speaker of the House in North Carolina, Tom Tillis. And he's what you probably would categorize as an establishment guy. He beat out a, heavily Tea Party backed challenger in the GOP Senate primary there in North Carolina. And so there's been kind of a trend going here. In Georgia, you had about four or five people running for in this primary, and let me see here. The two candidates who got the most votes here, that would be David Perdue, who is the cousin of former Governor Sonny Perdue, and Jack Kingston, who I believe is a congressman or is a former congressman. They will compete in a runoff in July against Michelle Nunn, who is the daughter of former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn. Mr. Kingston and Mr. Perdue will compete in a runoff, and whoever wins that runoff will compete in November against Michelle Nunn. And that will be an interesting race to watch. Let's see, there's a couple other things here from this piece, a really interesting piece here. And one of the other things it says here is that a lot of these Tea Party candidates, the Tea Party groups who back these candidates have not gotten a whole lot for their money. In the case of Kentucky, there were quite a few third party, I guess if you want to call it, groups, Tea Party groups, groups of that nature, and they poured a lot of money into Matt Bevin's campaign. They poured millions of dollars into it, and like I said, Mitch McConnell just kind of skated through. And one of the groups that really heavily backed Matt Bevin was Freedom Works, and they ran a pretty, I don't want to say it was a nasty campaign, but they really gave Mitch McConnell the business. They really ran an intense campaign against him. And it was kind of interesting too, because about 5 minutes after the polls closed in Kentucky, the race was being called for Mitch McConnell. And as soon as that happened, the Freedom Works people were backing him up and coming to, you know, back him up for November. And, you know, the thing with candidates that the Tea Party is going to back, they're looking for Ted Cruz types. They're looking for Rand Paul types. They're looking for Mike Lee types. And, I think that those kind of candidates, I don't know that you really can go looking for them. They kind of have to present themselves. And, you know, they don't just happen. And the same can be said for the Republican Party as a whole, because a lot of people will say that in looking to guys like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, that the Republican Party is constantly looking for the next Ronald Reagan. And the thing with that is that, you know, Ronald Reagan just happened. And I don't know that a lot of people went looking for him. He just kind of happened. He was there at the right place in the right time. And so I don't know that we can go looking for these candidates, that they're going to kind of have to, in the course of political life, they're going to have to just kind of present themselves, and they're going to have to just kind of appear. And aside from these other races here that happen on Tuesday, there's going to be a couple more here. On June the 3rd, Mississippi will have a primary between Senator Thad Cochran and his challenger, I believe his name is Chris McDaniel. Oklahoma is going to be very interesting. That will take place on June 24th when Representative James Lankford, he is the Republican Policy Committee Chairman in Oklahoma. He will face off against, for the Republican nomination there, he will face off against Oklahoma Speaker of the House, T.W. Shannon. He has been endorsed by the Club for Growth, and he has also been endorsed by Ted Cruz. And the cool thing about T.W. Shannon is that he is a rising black conservative star. And whatever happens in this race, whichever way it goes, it's not going to be the last that you hear of T.W. Shannon. Like I said, he's an up-and-coming guy. He is a black conservative. He's articulate. He's sharp. He's, for anybody who's ever, he hasn't been out in the spotlight a whole lot, but from what I have seen of him, be prepared to see a lot of him in the future, because like I said, he is going to be, he's going to be a guy that's out there. And anyway, I am going to take a break here. And before I go here, as I go to a break here, and while we're remembering our veterans, or remembering the vets who died for our country, one of the most abused, maybe is a good word, group of veterans in American history is Vietnam veterans. They came home and were not treated very nice. They were not thanked. They were not appreciated. And as I go to a break here, I think the song that I'm going to play here at the break, I think it used to be kind of a 60s anthem, but I think for conservatives, I think for those of us who are really ready to say to the left, bring it, and we're ready to get into the fight, and we're ready for it, this is our song now. And for the Vietnam vets who did not come home to very friendly faces, thank you for your service, all of you Vietnam veterans. Thank you for your service. Thank you for defending our nation, and welcome home. I'll be back in a minute.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop, hey, what's
You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me on this long holiday weekend. And I'm going to reiterate again, you know, we have made it to the end of a long, ugly week, my people. And everybody's going to get an extra day off. We're going to get an extra day to sleep in. We're going to get an extra day to do what we want to do. But while we're doing all those fun things, let's remember the men and women who we are celebrating this long weekend. Those who gave the ultimate sacrifice in defending our nation, because it's not just about barbecues and swimming and sleeping in. It's about remembering those people who have diligently watched our freedom and our liberty. And we remember them this weekend. We also keep in our thoughts, we keep their families and their loved ones in our thoughts as well. While we are doing that, you know, it is, it's that time of the year, people. It is time for commencement speeches, and it's time for inviting people to give commencement speeches. It's time to disinvite people, in the case of Condoleezza Rice and Rutgers University, time to disinvite people to give commencement speeches. But Michelle Obama gave a commencement speech in Topeka, Kansas this week, and she said some interesting things, but here's a little snippet.
We know that today in America, too many folks are still stopped on the street because of the color of their skin. Or they're made to feel unwelcome because of where they come from, or they're bullied because of who they love. So graduates, the truth is that Brown versus Board of Ed isn't just about our history, it's about our future. Because while that case was handed down 60 years ago, Brown is still being decided every single day. Not just in our courts and schools, but in how we live our lives. Now, our laws may no longer separate us based on our skin color, but nothing in the Constitution says we have to eat together in the lunchroom or live together in the same neighborhoods. There is no court case against believing in stereotypes or thinking that certain kinds of hateful jokes or comments are funny. So the answers to many of our challenges today can't necessarily be found in our laws. These changes also need to take place in our hearts and in our minds. And so, graduates, it's up to all of you to lead the way, to drag my generation and your grandparents' generation along with you. And that's really my challenge to all of you today. As you go forth, when you encounter folks who still hold the old prejudices because they've only been around folks like themselves, when you meet folks who think they know all the answers because they've never heard any other viewpoints, it's up to you to help them see things differently. And the good news is that you probably won't have to bring a lawsuit or go all the way to the Supreme Court to do that. You all can make a difference every day in your own lives simply by teaching others the lessons you've learned here in Topeka.
You know, there are so many things to pick apart from just that one little clip. First of all, when she talks about people being not sitting together in the lunchroom, and she talks about you know, that in many instances that the schools are still as segregated as when Dr. King gave his speech, and this was a commemoration of the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision. It was the 60th anniversary. The problem with that is that there are plenty of other people, there are plenty of Republicans and conservatives and maybe conservative Democrats who have tried to push things through like charter schools and things like school choice, school vouchers to give parents who have no other choice right now today but to send their children to failing schools and failing school districts. Why can't they give those people the same option? Michelle Obama is blessed and she's fortunate that she can send her children to a private school, and that's great. But not everyone is financially able to do so. So if that's not the case, why not give those people a choice? If you are so pro-choice and everything else, give these parents whose children are trapped in these failing schools and failing school districts, why don't we give them the choice through the school voucher program or through charter schools so that they can send their children somewhere else? She's saving that choice for herself and people like her, which also goes back to people who are only around people like them. Why doesn't she give other parents that same chance to get their children out of those failing schools and into a school voucher program so that they can send them to better schools and to get a better education? They're talking about school choice, but yet they're not allowing that school choice to happen and go forth. And when she talks about, like I said, you know, there's no law that says we have to sit in the lunchroom together, or there's all of these people who don't know anything, but because they've only been around people who are like them all their lives. And, you know, I think a lot of that segregation mentality, unfortunately, I don't think, and this is what I don't think that the left understands, unfortunately, no one but a few twisted souls here and there are going to condone racism in any form. But unfortunately, and I believe this, and you know, I can't believe that I'm the only one in America who does. I think that unfortunately that racism is a human condition, and that no matter what you do, it's not going to be completely eradicated. And that's unfortunate, but again, like I said, I believe that that's a human condition. And we can all do our best consciously in our daily lives to do so, and that's great. Let's do, absolutely. But when you have things like black studies classes and it's not just that, there's Hispanic studies classes and you have those kinds of things which by their very nature divide people into groups. I just don't know how many, if you take one of those kinds of classes like that, I don't know how many white kids are going to be all that encouraged to take a class like that. So I'm not sure how that is going to overcome divisiveness. But so some of the things that she's talking about here in this speech, her own party is guilty of. And, you know, we can go on and on about Democrats and segregation and racism. There's enough material there for not just one other show, but you know, I don't know how many shows, probably 10. But, I think that maybe, and it's the same old story. The left likes to preach to us about how to live our lives, but they don't ever seem to look in a mirror. And they don't ever seem to realize that what they're talking about, they're doing. And it's really just kind of more of a par for the course thing. It's not really too surprising. Valerie Jarrett, who is President Obama's right-hand woman, I don't want to be politically incorrect when I'm talking about Valerie Jarrett because, well, I'll tell you why in a minute here, why you would not want to be politically incorrect when you're talking about Valerie Jarrett. Valerie Jarrett also gave a commencement speech this week. It was at Pomona College. I believe that's in California. I could be wrong. But and I couldn't get a clip of this. I looked really hard. But one of the things that she said in her commencement speech was that before she, and I'm paraphrasing this, is that before she hires anyone, she goes online and she takes a look at what that person does online. And when she said that, she added, and I can find out what, and again, I'm paraphrasing, I can find out what you're doing online. I have many ways of finding out what people are doing online. So if that doesn't give you some goosebumps on the back of your neck, I don't know what does. Because while we are all sitting here tonight enjoying Conservative Cauldron Radio and enjoying the beginning of our long three-day weekend, Valerie Jarrett, if she wants to, can go online and look at whatever the hell you're doing. So that's a comforting thought. But so there was that. There was those lovely commencement speeches by Michelle Obama and Valerie Jarrett. Also this week, we had the opening of the 9/11 Museum. And that also is not without controversy. And I some of it is justified, some of it is not. And I have not been to the 9/11 Memorial in New York City. I would love to go. I would love to see it. I'm sure it's a very emotional. It's a very moving place. You know, we all remember where we were that day. I was 3 weeks away from getting married, and had a head full of thoughts about dress fittings and caterers and flowers and things like that. And when I woke up that morning and turned on my television, the first thought in my head was, but I'm getting married in 3 weeks. The world can't be coming to an end. But for a lot of people, for roughly 2,000 to 3,000 families, the world kind of did come to an end. At least it changed forever that day. And but there is a museum now in New York, the 9/11 Museum. It opened to the public on Wednesday. For the most part, there is a $24 admission fee for this. You know, how people will feel about it. I don't know. I realize everything's more expensive in New York, but $24, you know. And for the most part, I think it's a very, like I just said, it's a very, very moving, very emotional place. You know, they have, you know, many, many artifacts from that day, you know, smashed up fire engines and, you know, things like this, some of the wreckage and, you know, just, you know, whatever you would expect to be in a museum of that sort is there. But one of the problems with this is that, and I find this kind of tacky myself, there's a gift shop at the museum. And now the people who will defend this will say, well, there's a gift shop at the Pearl Harbor Museum. There's gift shops at Civil War Battlefield. You know, there's gift shops in many, many different places like this. But the problem with this one is that there are roughly 8,000 unidentified human remains that are housed in this museum. And for the family members of those people, that's a problem. Several of the family members have spoken out about this. And one of them was Jim Riches. Jim Riches himself is a retired New York City firefighter. And he lost his son, who was also a firefighter, on that day. And he said, I think it's a revenue-generating tourist attraction, was his quote. Another quote here was that he said, basically, they're making money off my son's dead body. I think that's disgusting. I think we can all certainly understand Mr. Ritchie's feeling there. I think that I would feel the same way. In defense of this, with the gift shop being there, along with the maybe the little pricey admission fee here, Joe Daniels, who is the president of the National September 11th Memorial, says that you know, he has explained that the cost of running this museum, the operation costs, are about $65 million yearly. And part of that $65 million is revenue from the gift shop that he says is needed. And, you know, I like I said, I think it's and there's even someone here also who is on the museum's board of directors who lost their son, who was also a firefighter that day, kind of actually has an opposite opinion of the whole thing and says that he hopes that the revenue generated will help maintain the museum and you know, keep the memory of this day alive for people so that we remember what happened that day and so that it won't happen again. But and there's also another controversy here. At the museum, they are showing a film called The Rise of Al-Qaeda. And in the film, they use terms like Islamists and jihad. And there's been an interfaith group that has come out objecting to this film because they believe that using those kind of terms are going to turn people off, not only maybe to the museum, but it's going to give them kind of a prejudiced view of Islam. And people are kind of there's, from what I have seen and read. And the museum does stand behind this film. They are not offering to change it or edit it in any way, which I think is good, because I think you have to use terms like jihad and Islamist because that's who perpetrated these attacks, and that's basically what was going on that day. Let's call it what it is. Let's not shove it under the rug. You know, I think that whoever is involved in this interfaith group, they're not going to get a whole lot of sympathy. Nobody is going to lump all Muslims together with the people who perpetrated these attacks. But you know, we have to call it what it is. And what happened that day was jihad, plain and simple. And the people who carried out those attacks were Islamists. They were jihadists. They were terrorists. And so I think that the interfaith group is probably, you know, if you don't like the film, don't watch it, you know. But so there's that. Also this week we have kind of a weird execution case going on here in Missouri. There's a guy here, his name is Russell Bucklew, who was supposed to be executed, put to death at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday night. For the 1996 killing of a man during a crime spree. What happened here, what Russell did to get himself on death row was that in 1996, I'm sorry, I have a, I'm like Rush, I have a stack of stuff, but that's the only way I'm like Rush. Anyway, in 1996, Russell Bucklew went to the home of his ex-girlfriend, Stephanie Pruitt, and the man she was now currently living with. He killed the man that she was living with, Michael Sanders, kidnapped Stephanie Pruitt, his ex-girlfriend, drove her to a remote area and raped her, then got into a shootout with a Missouri State Trooper. He was arrested and taken to jail after all this, but he escaped, went to the home of Stephanie Pruitt's mother, and attacked her with a hammer before he was finally jailed for good. Well, 12:01 Wednesday night came and went, and Russell Bucklew is still with us, unfortunately. He petitioned the Supreme Court, and actually, on Wednesday night, he got a stay of execution. Well, the execution was put on hold by the United States Supreme Court, and it was actually Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito himself who blocked the execution late Tuesday night. Buckley's problem, in addition to being a killer, is that he suffers from a rare congenital condition, and I'm gonna butcher this. The name of this condition is cavernous hemangioma. It causes weakened and malformed blood vessels as well as tumors in his nose and throat. His attorneys say that the secrecy surrounding the state's lethal injection drug combine to make for an unacceptably high chance of something going wrong during his execution. And Buckley also told the Associated Press last week that he is scared of what might happen during the process. You know, I don't have time here tonight, this evening, to rehash how we feel about the death penalty one way or the other. People are going to feel about it how they want to feel about it. My response to Mr. Buckley would be, cry me a river. I'm sure that Stephanie Pruitt was concerned about how much it would hurt when he raped and murdered her boyfriend. When he raped her and murdered her new boyfriend. So I'm sure that she was probably concerned with pain herself. However, Mr. Buckley was not concerned with her pain. He is only concerned with his own. So this all stems from that case in Oklahoma where they tried to execute a guy named Clayton Lockett, and he went into convulsions, and it was just this horrible, awful situation. And they kept calling it a botched execution, and I thought, he's dead. How is it botched? Go figure. But apparently Mr. Buckley, who has the has access to a law library and things of that nature, this was put on hold. And what happened was that between early Wednesday morning, he could have been executed any time between early Wednesday morning and late Thursday night, but that has not happened yet. The execution is still on hold. So we will be following this story to see what happens with Russell Buckley and if the family of his victims get any sort of justice at all. Very quickly, too, there was an interesting poll that came out this week. It was done by Gallup poll, and it asked people, a percentage of Americans, what was the most important thing facing the nation right now? And think about all the things that the media likes to make us believe are important. The bottom things here are race relations, the environment and pollution, and immigration are the bottom three, which I think that immigration probably should be a little bit more up there. But the top three are unemployment and jobs, dissatisfaction with government, Congress, politicians, poor leadership, corruption, abuse of power, and the economy, and then poor health care comes right after that. So when you're watching the mainstream media and they're trying to tell you what's important, the things that they're talking about, the global warming and racism and those kind of things, those are at the bottom of the list. So keep that in mind when you are watching mainstream media, people. Anyway, it is about time for me to head on out of here. Little housekeeping here for a second. I am going to have some very exciting and interesting announcements, I believe, in the next couple of weeks concerning Conservative Cauldron Radio. So please stay tuned for those. In the meantime, please go to conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, where it all started. Please go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble. I am at Twitter at Patriot Witch. And please, please, please go to newsninja2012.com. And please check out War Radio. You can find that on live365.com and tuned in for all of my great News Ninja colleagues. They have great radio shows on. There's great music. Everything you love is going to be there. And check out all of their great pieces at newsninja2012.com. I am out of here. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. See you next time.